April 7th, 1969 was opening day for the Atlanta Braves. At the top of their lineup was leadoff hitter Felipe Alou, one of three Alou brothers to start in the major leagues. Felix Milan, El Gatito, batted second and played second base. Then came the hammer, the great Henry Hank Aaron. Orlando Cha-Cha Cepeda batted cleanup for the team, then in their fourth season in Georgia's capital city. Tito Francona, Cleet Boyer, Bob Tillman, and Sonny Jackson rounded out the everyday players, while righty Pat Jarvis took the mound as the vaulted opening day starter. Their opponent was the San Francisco Giants, whose scorecard included legends Willie Mays, Bobby Bonds, and Willie McCovey, with Juan Marichal, he of the acrobatic windup, on the mound. The Braves would play two runs in the bottom of the ninth, the game winner by pinch hitter Mike Lum, whose liner to center field chased home Sonny Jackson, and they beat the Giants 5-4. It was an auspicious beginning, guided by manager Lum Harris. By the time October rolled around, the Braves would wind up with a stellar 93-69 record. They'd win their first ever National League West crown by three games over those same Giants. I turned nine halfway through that season. At night, my transistor radio earplug was filled with the sounds of Braves broadcasters Milo Hamilton and Ernie Johnson, Sr. In the morning, I'd retrieve the paper from our drive and scan the box scores, poring over baseball's elegantly charted statistics in that era so very long before every game was televised and when papers still printed box scores. I'd learn at that tender age that baseball will absolutely break your heart. Over the course of just three short days, October 4th and 5th and 6th, in the first ever division series playoff, the 69 Miracle Mets would sweep the Braves. After taking the first two in Atlanta before more than 54,000 Mets faithful at Shea Stadium, they'd overcome a first inning two-run blast by Hank Aaron and prevail in the series final game 7-4. So, to this day, our unused 1969 World Series tickets remain on my baseball shelves at home. A poignant reminder that not all dreams come true. And calling into question that cinematic claim, there's no crying in baseball. To a nine-year-old kid whose dad had grown up walking to baseball games at the old Ponce de Leon Park in Atlanta with his dad, the ups and downs of that season were a big deal. A very big deal. While most of my memories of that summer have long faded, the names of that season's players remain familiar. I can still hear Milo's signature call, "Holy Toledo!" And I can still smell the mixed aromas of those vast curving concourses in the long since demolished stadium. As many of you have heard not a few times before, baseball was and is a big deal to me. In a summer freighted with such difficult personal emotions, baseball this year is especially satisfying and sustaining, particularly given the Baby Braves' unexpected success. But I also now understand something clearly, something I didn't know that season when I turned 9. Baseball is absolutely, utterly trivial. Trivial, of no ultimate consequence. Yes, you heard it right. The admission from one of baseball's biggest fans, it doesn't really matter. And though it felt quite different to me then, in the actual context of things, it never really mattered in 1969 either. Consider that year, that tumultuous, troubling, terrifying year. Richard Nixon was sworn in as president. The troubles flared in Northern Ireland. Yasser Arafat was elected president of the Palestine Liberation Organization. Soviet and Chinese troops clashed. James Earl Ray pled guilty to assassinating Martin Luther King Jr. The U.S. began a covert bombing of Cambodia. There was serious student unrest from Harvard to Berkeley. A space war raged between the U.S. and the USSR. The Cuyahoga River in Cleveland caught fire. The Stonewall riots in New York marked the start of the gay rights movement. The Manson family murders took place in Los Angeles. Hurricane Camille ravaged the Gulf Coast. There was severe violence in Czechoslovakia. Gaddafi rose to power in a bloodless coup in Libya. Lieutenant William Calley was charged in the My Lai massacre. China carried out an underground nuclear blast. Native Americans seized Alcatraz Island and began a 19-month occupation. The military draft lottery was reinstituted. Black Panther Party members Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were assassinated by Chicago police officers. Nigerian and Biafran troops clashed. The first strain of the AIDS virus migrated to the U.S. via Haiti. All of that was in 1969. How is it possible that I was focused on and have just finished talking yet again about baseball? Obviously, in a world like that, or like this, baseball is trivial. So given this tumultuous, troubling, terrifying year, month, week, why are we paying a moment's attention to baseball? Or to anything else that's trivial? Why? Because we can. Because we need to. Because not everything in life matters or should matter. Because part of what distinguishes living from getting by, part of what distinguishes living from simply surviving, enduring, is the trivial. Oh, for you, it may not be baseball at all, and may God have mercy on your soul. And if not, what might it be? What plays a role in your life that is honestly of no real consequence? What distracts you? What entertains you? What amuses you? What evokes happy memories for you? What do you do that you know really doesn't have any particularly deep meaning or any especially important significance in the grand scheme of things? I was reminded how inherently puritanical we remain in reading and researching for this particular service. Oh, there were those who joined in celebrating the trivial. However, most found value in trivial pursuits because taking breaks makes us more productive, more efficient, more effective. Taking time for little meaningless distractions can, studies show, help us to focus more intently. Learning mindless things like baseball statistics or crossword puzzle answers or pop song lyrics may aid us in learning meaningful things that are consequential and important. So we can be excused for indulging in the trivial because it helps equip us to deal with things that are non-trivial. Really? What about enjoying the trivial because it's enjoyable? Would that be such a bad thing? In times barraging us with so much that is so deeply serious. In times calling on people of conscience to be courageous, to acknowledge our complicity in injustices and inequities, to reevaluate old ideals and profoundly problematic old idealists, to pay attention to new and inconceivable oppressions. Even now, is it still okay to indulge in trivialities? Today offers a serious attempt to provide a serious justification for seriously accepting that not everything is serious. Oh, to be sure, when we start confusing the trivial for the more consequential, if ever we forget that what really doesn't matter, really doesn't matter, we are off track. When we give the trivial too much space in our lives, when we allow it to claim too many of our resources, too much of our time, we are off track. When we begin to believe that the outcome of games really matters, we are off track. But let such perspective not serve as an impediment to second guessing, dismissing, or some puritanical denial. Instead, let there be summer seasons in our engagements. Let there be warm and languid seasons for less serious pursuits. Let there be year-round many summer vacations from earnestness. Let there be times for the commonplace, the frivolous, the insignificant, the everyday, the piddling, the puny, the scanty, the trifling, and even the nugatory. Years ago, I fell madly in love with an utterly compelling Greek man. His name was Alexis. Alexis Zorba. My love was not Anthony Quinn, mind you. I fell in love with Nikos Kazantzakis Zorba from his amazing novel. In fact, so deep was my love that I've never dared to see the movie for fear it would ruin my imaginative affair. It was sparked in the first exchange in that cafe in Piraeus. Replying to probing, Zorba responds, "Why? Why," he exclaimed with disdain, "can't a man do anything without a why?" It was his passion that I found irresistible. Zorba was a man who had worked fiendishly in that Cretan mine, but he would also eat, drink, make love, sing, play the santuri, and of course, dance with that same passion. Doing all those things without any why, not because they were momentously important, but simply because they were woven so seamlessly into his life, into his living. Zorba didn't disdain the trivial. Zorba didn't indulge the trivial. Zorba embraced the trivial and imbued it with seductive vitality. So perhaps Zorba can be the patron saint of the summer seasons of our lives. Times when we let up. Times when we indulge a full 9 innings of sheer enjoyment. In a curious little article, British marketing executive Jim Carroll wrote, "Here's to the inconsequential, the incidental and frivolous. Here's to the modest, the momentary and fleeting. Here's to swimming in the shallow end." Yes. Yes, indeed. May it be so.